It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
You're now locked into The Zone with Diamonds and Roses podcast, bringing you one step closer to Pacific Northwest and Southwest Canada baseball news, stories, and history. Proudly fueled by Baseballism, they're America's brand, and Devo Bat Company, professional wood grain bats for the love of the game. And now your hosts, Ben and Travis.
Welcome, everybody, to Season 4, Episode 4, number 125 of the Diamonds and Roses podcast. We have, as always, a great guest and a great episode lined up for you today. Joining us is Quinton John Alohiokala Torres Costa from Hilo, Hawaii. Mahalo, Quinton. How are you?
Good, good, good. Thank you for having me on here.
I'm excited to have you on. You come highly recommended by a good friend, and you have an interesting story throughout your career, and I'm excited to dive into that history, but I'm also excited to see where you're going next. So thank you. I appreciate you taking the time to join me. So without further ado, let's jump on into this. What got you into baseball? You know, you're on the islands, but what got you into baseball?
For me, I was an energetic kid growing up. So my parents didn't want me to stay home and drive them crazy. So they put me in sports. So I played multiple sports, from baseball, basketball, soccer, football. Surfing, like just anything outdoors or get me into a sport, they were trying to sign me up. And then finally, as I got older, it was between baseball and soccer for a college offer, and I decided baseball. So that's kind of where baseball, I just stuck with it. And then I always had good friends like Colton Wong and Keen Wong. Keen Wong, me and him went to the same high school. He was actually my catcher during high school, and we all like worked out and did a lot of stuff together. So that's kind of where I just started running with baseball and kind of making I didn't think it would be kind of a career for me in the beginning. I just thought it was like, I was pretty good. I could throw the ball pretty hard and see how far this could take me. And then eventually as I got to college and then I actually got drafted, I actually realized that, like, hey, I could actually make a living out of this and do something with my life and kind of make a name for myself.
What, you're a pitcher, but was there a different position that you played initially? And if so, like, what was that? But also at the same time, what got you into pitching?
I was a two-way in college when I first got signed or committed to University of Hawaii at Manoa. So I played first base and center field. Kind of the typical left-handed positions. When I was in Little League, I played everywhere. I was just the kid that could, you know, just if you're athletic at that age, you could kind of pretty much do anything. And I caught, I played shortstop. I made it work as a left-handed kid. But as I got older, it went straight to like first base and center field. I kind of like center field a lot more than pitching when I was younger in high school, just because I just like to be more athletic and I could, you know, throw pretty far and pretty accurate from the center field. And I just like tracking down balls. It was kind of like my thing. It was my niche in baseball. Mm-hmm. And then as I got older, to like my sophomore year, I think I got up to like 91 as a pitcher. And that's right there, once I hit 91, they were just like, yeah, you're left-handed and you throw 91. You're probably going to be a pitcher. Hitting was okay, but it wasn't outstanding that, you know, I would get drafted by.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I took the route of just finally making the decision of just, all right, this is where my ticket's going to be, and let's make the most out of it.
As a youth, what's baseball like for somebody? I mean, because you could play year-long around in Hawaii, but I can't imagine. I mean, you probably – did you do that or did you not do that? But how is youth baseball like in Hawaii?
I did baseball year-round starting my junior year in high school. Before that, I wasn't really too just focused on one sport at a time. Like I said, my parents put me in different sports. So depending on the season, I would just change to a different sport. And I think it was soccer, then baseball, then baseball is basketball. I don't know how it was in Hawaii. It was kind of a while ago. But yeah, not until I got to my junior year at high school when scouts and then other universities were coming to me and just like, hey, do you want to make a decision on like, what do you want to do for, you know, your next level? Is, do you want to play another sport? Do you want to play both sports or do you want to just play one sport? And I was really contemplating, I wanted to play soccer and baseball for like a college, but there was not really a college that I liked that had both of them. And then, University of Hawaii Manoa came with a really good offer, and I just told my parents, like, why not just represent the whole, my family and kind of play for the state and kind of go up from there. I remember watching Colton Wong at UH too, so kind of, he was kind of like a role model for me at the time to kind of follow in his footsteps and then do what he did and kind of go from there.
What was it about Colton that like drew you to like hit him as a player?
They're kind of like the family friends of mine. We've been playing since we were like 12.
Yeah.
So we've been always going to the park or the baseball field at like 6 o'clock in the morning, getting our reps in, ground balls, batting practice, throwing programs. We've been doing that since, you know, since I was a freshman in high school. And what drew me towards them was like they were the guys that were doing things in baseball. And I mean, if you want to do something with your life, you surround yourself with other people likewise. And that's kind of where I got it from. And then I was also the only pitcher that could throw hard enough for Colton for his off seasons. So I was the one facing him, kind of like a 2-strike drill or just regular live at bats, and kind of learning from what he gave me, and then I could help him. So it was like kind of a give and take.
Nice. Very nice. You mentioned that you surfed. I got to ask, did surfing and the agility of, you know, being on your feet, that balance, that movement with your ankles and your legs, do you think that played a little bit into you being a little bit more agile, like playing baseball?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think just a combination of everything. I surfed, played soccer, a lot of swimming, bodyboarding. So all that different aspects of, you know, surfing with just your arm circles of trying to just paddle out into the ocean gives you that shoulder strength. And then also with the balance of getting up onto the board and like stability. And then with soccer, it just gives me leg strength so I could stay in condition to, you know, deliver the pitch constantly every single time that I want to. And just, yeah, I think a combination of many different sports kind of made me who I am today and made it more so that I could be more athletic on the mound and, you know, kind of perform to my best ability.
Yeah. Did you have a favorite professional team growing up?
No.
No.
We didn't have really a team. The only team that was really on TV was the University of Hawaii.
Okay.
So baseball, basketball, and football. And during the time I was in high school, I think that was the year of Colt Brennan.
Yeah.
And when they went to the Sugar Bowl. So football was a big thing. But at that time, I was a twig. I think I weighed like 120 pounds soaking wet. So my parents were like, no, I don't think you can play baseball or football.
Yeah. Broken.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially being Hawaii, where there's a lot of Polynesians that are weighing at least 300 pounds in high school.
Yeah.
Coming at you. So it's just like you're already playing almost college football at the time.
Yeah. Like a freight train hitting you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the old line in general, everybody was at least 260 or above.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So they're thick. I don't think they were agile, but they were big. And if they fell on me, I would definitely have broken.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned just a bit ago that you had coaches, you had scouts come into you, you know, saying, hey, you need to, Quentin, you need to make a choice. What's your choice going to be? I'm suppose you've had some pretty in-depth conversations with your parents, maybe even your coaches, but kind of walk me through kind of like what that thought process was like for you and ultimately making that decision to just go with baseball.
For me, it was just at the time soccer was prevalent. So it was between soccer and baseball. I really like soccer just because I kind of just like the aspect of maybe going to Europe and like traveling and, you know, becoming a soccer star. The only thing I didn't like was, to be honest, was how much running I was done. Compared to baseball, the running was kind of like a quarter of what we normally did. And I could actually see a future with baseball just because I've had people in front of me that I could kind of not tailor my path towards, but have a guideline of understanding what it takes to become to the next level and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. With soccer, it was more just like I got offered to go to play in Europe in England for like this high school. I don't know what they call it, high school team or like our premier team that they kind of develop kids from there. And just being away from home from that far and with a different kind of culture, mm-hmm. I didn't know if I could handle it at that time in my age.
Okay. So then you made the decision, and then you said scouts were talking to you. Were they mentioning anything about, well, maybe you could, you know, jump from high school to play professionally, or was this all during college?
This was in high school. There's a few scouts there. There was another player, Cody Medeiros. He was a first round draft pick for the Brewers in 2014, I believe. So me and him were both on the same high school team, and there was a lot of scouts scout both of us. And they were saying that, yeah, we could have a possibility of going to pros out of high school. But for me personally, I'm adopted, and no one in my biological family has had a college degree. And for me, it was my way of giving back to my adopted family of going back or going to college and getting a degree and kind of showing them that, you know, your hard work and, you know, patience with me not actually being your son is paying off, and you're going to reap the fruits of your labor kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, I get that portion. I mean, I was adopted myself, and you know, I remember going to college because, like, you know, my adopted parents, like, you're going to college. I don't care. And so, you know, I get it. And like, I respect that. And that's good to know. And I appreciate it. And so you were probably being recruited by a few schools. What schools were those besides University of Hawaii?
There were UCLA, Baylor, Washington. And my dream school actually out of high school was North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
The Tar Heels. I just watched a lot of College World Series, and UNC was always there, and that's kind of like the team that I wanted to be a part of, and trying to get there, but kind of weighing out my options, and also being all the way on the East Coast, being 18 at the time, being that far away from home, not really understanding what I need to do, kind of weighing out my options. That's eventually, and then UH coming in with their offer, made my decision to go to University of Hawaii and, you know, pursue my path through UH.
Sounds like you had a good, I mean, from what I'm hearing, and what I'm hearing repetitively here is that you put some thought into, like, just what it meant for you and what it could have been for you had you taken yourself and moved to a different area, whether it be North Carolina, whether it be California, whether it be London, England, or England as a whole, wherever it was, would have been in England. You had the head on your shoulders to make that thought and make the determination and say, like, I don't know if this is going to be right for me because it's such a long way away from home. Like, how is that going to impact me as a person? You know, and I think that's really good that, like, that you had that mentality of being able to think about that, because you don't want to go there and just drop out and say, I'm going back home. Cause then
probably
would have made you feel like a failure.
For sure. I've had a lot of, like, just teammates when I was in high school or former classmates that have gone away. And they've always had that island fever of just kind of, I miss home. Cause it's, I mean, we were living in Hawaii. Don't get me wrong. It is a paradise. And being on the island and growing up there, all I could think about was just get off the rock, get off and make a name for yourself. But a lot of people that came before me left and, like, went to different places like Arizona, California, or you know, Canada, and then they came back and then they stayed there. They stayed back in Hawaii because they're just saying, like, it's a culture shock. I mean, not everybody has that aloha spirit of, you know, take care of one another, or you know, if you need help, you can rely on somebody else, or someone has your back. So that right there was kind of like an eye opener for me of realizing, like, hey, if I do go there, do I know anybody else there? Do I have the means of the resources to, you know, if something bad were to happen or something wrong were to happen, I have the steps in order so that I can go to this person, that person, and kind of make it work. But looking at the, you know, the bigger picture, I didn't really have that much support compared to being back home in Hawaii.
Nice. And then, so, you know, you had that support system home. You make the decision to attend the University of Hawaii. You go into your freshman year. You start playing. And then you get hurt your first season playing Hawaii. And you require Tommy John surgery. You know, was it demoralizing for you at that point, like having that knowing that you had to have that surgery? Or is it one of those things where, like, hey, this thing is like routine now. People get it all the time. I know I can come back from that. What was in that your mind? What was your mindset at that point?
At that time, I thought I was invincible. I thought going through Tommy John would have been a cakewalk for me personally, because just knowing that, you know, yeah, at the time it's routine. A lot of people were getting it and a lot of people were having success with it for their Tommy John. And being younger and naive, I thought I was, you know, I would just bounce back, you know, be normal, my like a normal self, and go back to what I was doing before. And then I had a quick dose of reality when it actually happened and went through the rehab process and understanding of like how much extra work that is needed to just even kind of get back to close to normal. Mm-hmm. And you're never going to be, what I realize is like, you're never going to be your normal self again. There's mental struggles that I've gone through, and then there's also the physical struggles, but I think more so on the mental side was the part that I didn't really take into consideration and understanding like the headspace that I was in, trying to feel or like do things that weren't normal and natural, and trying mm-hmm. to kind of reprogram my mind to get back to kind of like fighting shape.
Yeah. Of course, the university and their athletic department, along with the team, the coaches, the team, want you to get back, you know, and be that player or be a player similar to what you were before Tommy John. What was that support network like at the school, from teammates, from coaches that you received?
It was great. I think it was top notch. The trainer I actually had was from Japan. His name is Kohei Ohashi. I still keep in contact with him to this day. Really good dude. But me and him kind of had like a program, set plan of what's going to happen, how are we going to tackle this. And I've also did my own research of understanding like, all right, what is a good throwing program? At the time, Jaeger bands were the big thing, and cross symmetries. There's a lot of band work. Weighted balls weren't until like later in like 2015 when I started hearing about that. So we trying to devise the weightlifting program on top of the Jaeger band program, on top of my throwing program, to kind of create our own little kind of 6 months plan to get back into season and start throwing. We didn't really have that much information of like Tommy John rehabs. Well, it was all based off what we researched, me and him, on our own, and talking to the doctor that did our surgery, which looking back, he was a hand surgeon, I think. He wasn't really known for Tommy John, but he was the doctor that would do all the Tommy Johns for the team anyway. So we trusted his opinion and kind of understood where to go from there. And I had to be in tune with my body and understand if I needed to take a day or, you know, if I could push more and really focus on getting back to, like I said, fighting shape and back into performing at the highest level that I could.
Mm-hmm. At what point in the year for your freshman year in baseball did that happen?
I want to say like a month after the season started.
Okay.
Yeah.
So were you able to get back into the next season and start that spring?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
I was able to play fall ball with no problem. And then I think I started the third or second series against Nevada. I don't remember the off the top of my head, but yeah, I remember my first outing since getting Tommy John was against University of Nevada. And I think I didn't do so good, but I was throwing pretty hard.
Yeah.
I think I had a few punchies, but I also had a good amount of walks. And I don't know if it was just nerves, but I felt really good. And I kind of understood that would have happened, but kind of learned from the mistakes and then kind of kept moving forward from there.
Okay. I just want to take one step back and I want to ask, when you made your first collegiate appearance just out there, What was that feeling like for you? Like, hey, I've now gone from high school. Now I'm playing college ball and I'm here on the mound making my first collegiate appearance.
It was kind of a cool thing, actually, because when I was first about to start, or the season was about to start, we knew we were going to play the third ranked team was Oregon at the time in the nation. It was the Oregon. And coach Mike Trapasso told me like a week before, hey, you're probably going to be the closer, even if we get there. And then I think, or yeah, 2 weeks before, he said he was going to tell me that I was going to be the closer. And then a week before, he's like, actually, I changed my mind. You might probably going to be the Friday or Saturday guy because we might not even use you because we need to have a lead first in order to get to the closing spot. And we're playing the third ranked team in the nation. So yeah, you're going to start on, I want to say Saturday. Yeah, I wasn't the Friday guy, I was Saturday. And we'll see how you do. So, yeah, Saturday came around and I started every game. I started my first game in college against the third ranked team in the nation. And I think that was the most packed stand since university had, because I think I was the first local boy that was a starter on a Saturday. And for me at the time, I think it was only like 1700 people, but me at the time, that was a lot. pitching in front of, you know, 50 people in high school, and then 1700 for my opening day was kind of a big thing. I think I got through like four innings, gave up two runs. It wasn't good, but it wasn't great. It was a kind of a cool experience for me. Kind of my first get your feet wet in college. Here you go. Here's a third ranked team in the nation. We'll see how you do.
Yeah. We might not get the lead, so you might not get it. So therefore, we're going to put you in as a starter. As a starter. Love that. That's funny. So let's fast forward back to, you know, after your Tommy John, you go in, you play that year. But you have you get an interesting opportunity come the summer where you get to go go to Victoria, British Columbia, and play for the Harbor Cats. For those that don't listen to this podcast, we do a lot with the West Coast Summer Collegiate Baseball League. It's a wooden bat league here in the Pacific Northwest. And Victoria Harbor Cats happen to be one of those teams that are in that league under some very good management. They have one of the best teams in the league consistently each year. And now you get the opportunity to go there. Of course, you're probably getting talked to by coach and saying, hey, we got this opportunity in Victoria for you to go play some summer ball. What did they tell you about the team? Like, what was that excitement level for you?
For me, it was literally just the coach like, hey, we got a summer ball team for you. It's going to be in Canada. We want you to get as many reps as you can to hopefully, you know, come back even better and stronger for the next year. That's kind of what he told me. My coach didn't really, this is the only time I didn't really do that much information on the West Coast League. For me, it was just more, I need to play. Just coming off of Tommy John and not having enough time, you know, pitching in games and understanding how my stuff worked compared to hitters was a big thing for me, an understanding of how do I get outs. And in this game, if you don't get outs, you don't get paid. Or you don't get to play at the time. So that was kind of my mindset coming into Victoria, was get as many reps as I can and eventually, you know, figure out what works and find a routine that works for me and go from there. That was kind of my mindset going in.
Talk to me about how, like, getting there and, you know, what that experience is like.
It was definitely an eye-opener for me. I never played in a travel ball team or anything like that. First time I ever had a host family. First time ever being on my own, really, away from the island. So it was a great experience, actually. And at the time, I was 18. So in Canada, 18 years, you're like 21 there. So kind of got to be kind of a adult, so to say, and do things that, you know, you wouldn't be able to do back in the States. Like, you know, just be a normal kind of human being of outside of baseball, celebrating. And I was also in college, so of course you're going to go party and you're going to go figure out stuff like that. I loved it. I think those were my greatest experiences in baseball, in that summer league, learning a lot, one about myself and then one about, you know, who I am as a baseball player. I had a really good teammate with Alex Degody. Another Harper Cat was there a year before and he came back. Degody was kind of like, me and him were like buddy going around and just, you know, picking each other's brains, and kind of seeing what we could do to, you know, better ourselves as baseball players and then also as just human beings in general.
Being in the summer league kind of gives you some initial insight to what it would be like playing in the minor league system, because it's a little bit of a grind. Though you got some little bit of downtime, it's a little bit of a grind because you're pretty much almost playing day in, day out.
Yeah.
And how did that impact you going from, you know, college to then playing this in the summertime and just being go, 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 go?
For me, I loved it. My personality is just like, keep going. Don't really stop. I'm not really one to sit down and kind of take things in. I'm more of, you know, let's get it done. And if it's not done the right way, then figure out why we failed and use those failures to learn how to do it right the next time, you know? So that's that. I loved it. And understanding that this is what it is going to be when you get to pro ball. And I think it was a good stepping stone for me. At the time, I didn't think I was going to make pro ball because I was just more worried about, like, I need to get outs first. And, you know, be a better pitcher. So for me, I was just more focused on, you know, enjoying the experience and having the most fun as possible at the time. And then looking back at it now, this definitely helped me in my later years when I got drafted by the Brewers and understanding of pro ball, where you get maybe one day off a month. And every day it's, you're kind of having the same routine, having the same, practice, all that kind of stuff over and over again. And then it gets monotonous. But for me, I didn't really see it as a chore. I just saw it as you get 1% better every day. And then eventually those 1% add up and you become who you want to be. And that was kind of my mindset going in. And understanding how I wanted to become a professional baseball player in the minors.
Now, you talked about family early on, and I know that playing in the West Coast League, and you know, when you get into early A ball, you're staying with a family like during that time frame. And I know how important it is to you. Did you get close to the family that you stayed with that summer? Do you keep in touch with them? I mean, what was that experience like for you?
Yeah. They were a really great family. I've kept in touch with, they had two boys there, their sons. They still keep in touch with me here and there through social media. And that's kind of all that we do. I have a few other families that in minor league baseball that still contact me during, you know, the holidays and stuff. Cause they see it as like, they're like the second mom or second dad in the family. And, they've treated me, I've never really had a bad host family. So all my families that I've been with, they're really good and took me in as their kid or like their son, in the family and kind of gave me whatever I needed to, you know, perform at my best for baseball.
Where, what host family gave you the best meal, like the best home cooked meal?
I'm not gonna lie. I was in Wisconsin with the Timber Rattlers, and they have a thing called beer butt chicken.
Yeah.
There. And one of the host families, he was known for it. And I was like, what is this? I've never heard of this beer butt chicken thing. And he has the process for it. Like, the dad, his name was Bob, but Bob would literally, he would take 2 weeks for him to prepare the chicken. So wow. That he could like get it ready. But that was probably the best meal I've had. And then there was another host family also in Wisconsin that every Sunday the dad had a Traeger. So yep. He would be making any type of barbecue meat or anything. He just loved using that thing. So, and I loved eating. So it was a match. It was a match made in heaven. Every Sunday we would have teammates come in and kind of just hang out there and enjoy the Wisconsin summer with his barbecues.
Yeah. Did they ever try anything out on you? Like, I'm working on this. Give this a try.
A few times. Normally, I don't think we really had a bad experience with what he cooked. He was pretty good at like anything barbecue related or anything mm-hmm. with that Traeger. He knew exactly how to cook everything to the best. Anything yeah. from pork, steak, chicken. Like, I've never had like a dry meal with him. It was always top notch.
Nice. So moving on, you get drafted in 2015 by the Milwaukee Brewers. Is this something, you know, you got people that are watching this online and it's just going through the draft picks. Talk to me about how it felt once you saw your name called.
For me, I was more disappointed, to be honest. I was talking to plenty of scouts. They were telling me, oh yeah, you'd be top 10 for sure. You're left-handed. You throw decently hard. You have a good possibility of being drafted pretty high. And the first 2 days go by, and those were the televised days. So name didn't get called. I was watching. Their day comes, I think it was the last day, and I think they got all the way down to like the 25th round. And I'm just like, oh, I'm over this. This is not going to end up for me. And I ended up just taking a drive out back home. I was going to probably just go to the beach and kind of relax because I was just getting stressed out, not seeing where I wanted to be. And then on my way to the beach, I get a call from the Brewers, actually. And they're like, congratulations. I'm like, wait, first of all, who are you? And secondly, what happened? Why are you congratulating me? And it's like, oh, I'm with the Milwaukee Brewers. And we just signed you in the 35th round. And you're going to be a Brewer. And I'm like, oh, wait, are you serious? Like, I thought this was a joke for some reason. Mm-hmm. Like, my friends were prank calling me or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, I got off the phone with the Brewers guy, and 5 minutes later my agent calls me and he's like, yeah, this is real. They're going to send over the contract. You can read over it, and then once you sign that dotted line, they want you to fly up there, I think the next day, to get ready for the Arizona League. And I was like, oh, this is quick. Like,
yeah.
All of a sudden, I was in Hawaii for like 3 days. I think I just finished season. And all of a sudden, I'm flying out again into Arizona. And I had nobody I knew out there. But I signed the dotted line. They got me a plane ticket. And I think my first night in Arizona, I almost got lost in the airport. Because they were like, they gave me like a shuttle pass. So I think I like, first I went to the wrong shuttle and I had to walk like all across to another terminal, and eventually got on the right bus. But there were 13 other stops in front of me. And me at the time, not knowing where I was going, I was just like, I hope he's taking me to the right place. Like, I don't know where I'm going. Please tell me this is the right address. This is the right hotel. There's multiple times where I was just like, I'm definitely going to get lost. And eventually I found the hotel and then reported to the Brewers complex the next day.
Yeah, they have a very nice, there's some really nice facilities down there in Arizona. I mean,
oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. There's, I mean, everything's all close to it by each other too, which is convenient. So if I did get lost, then another team could probably point me in the right direction.
They'd probably look at you funny, like,
yeah, over there. Yeah.
How, like, what were you thinking, like, walking into the facilities that first time and, like, this is real?
For me, it was kind of like the fruits of my labors are kind of presenting themselves a little bit for me. All that hard work where no one really saw, all the times that, you know, waking up early in the morning to get a workout in, or you know, skipping holidays or skipping birthdays just so that I could get my rest or get my training in or get my throwing in. It was kind of almost paying off in my mind, but knowing that there is still, for me, I saw each level as a stepping stone in the minor leagues, and my goal was to get to the big leagues. And mm-hmm. I had a plan of trying to get to AAA by my third or fourth year, I think. And that's all I really had on my mind was, I need to get to AAA by this year and prove to myself that I have what it takes, and I'm going to be a big leaguer.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So, you know, you play rookie ball that first year in Arizona, and then you come back the following year. And as you mentioned earlier, you moved up to Wisconsin to play for the Timber Rattlers, which is the single A affiliate for the Brewers. What's that feeling like, knowing that, like, now, like, okay, so you're out of rookie ball. Now you're really getting that shot to start playing minor league ball, you know, against other players at that time?
For me, it was a great opportunity. I saw it as just one more stepping stone and figuring out how do I master my craft and become a better pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
The way I saw it, Cody Medeiros was in that league before me, and he was in high A and I was in low A. So I would always talk to him. He was kind of like my resource to talk to, like, what do I do? What's going on? What is the surrounding areas like, you know? So I had somebody, which is nice. He was also a fellow Hawaiian. So
mm-hmm.
we always stuck together and kind of bounce back things. I mean, we always did that in high school too. So it was almost like we were playing high school again together.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good that you had that opportunity to bounce things off from somebody that you knew to be able to, like, what's this like? What's that like? And, you know,
oh, yeah.
It felt like you were, you know, getting something back from it, and you could acclimate to that system, which is really cool. How is that first year for you in low A ball?
To be honest, it wasn't good. I actually got sent down midway through the season back to rookie ball to the Helena Brewers, which was their rookie ball at the time. And for me, I got lucky because the pitching coach was also the pitching coordinator or assistant coordinator at the time. So rookie ball started, and he would take in every pitcher after every outing and just talk to them about their outings and see what was their mindset, what was their game plan, what were they trying to do. And for me, that really helped me open my eyes of, like, what I need to do as a pitcher mentally, and then also a game plan physically of attacking hitters. Mm-hmm. And after I had that few conversations with the pitching coach, I got lucky and I got sent right back up for the end of the year back to low A, and understood that mindset and kind of took it along with me as I went. And the following season, I got invited to go to high A, which was Carolina Mudcats now.
Yeah, Mississippi.
Mississippi, yeah, the Mississippi. Yeah.
In North Carolina.
North Carolina. Yeah, they were the Biloxi. That's Biloxi.
Biloxi's. I got a little bit ahead of myself with the Biloxi next one.
Yeah. So yeah, our the Carolina High A team. We had a lot of guys. We had a lot of first rounders, and we had a lot of studs. To be honest, I mean Corbin Burns, Freddie Peralta. We had Marcus Dupont, or not Dupont, Duplon. We had we had a lot of Jordan Yamamoto was on the team. So we had a lot of big leaguers looking back at that team. And I think being around with such, you know, good talent, it only just brings a team up in general, and everybody kind of picked up their game. And that's where I kind of realized where my niche is as a left-handed pitcher and how I need to get lefties out, and kind of understanding who I am slowly as a, my identity as a pitcher in high A, which was, I think, very beneficial for me.
On a side note, out of the University of Portland, Cooper Hummel was playing for the Mudcats at the same time. And so I was curious, and Cooper's a you know, another West Coast alum. So I was wondering if you would run into Cooper during that time.
Actually, yes. Yeah, me and Coop, we still talk to this day. He was a catcher of mine, and I loved how Cooper catched and his mindset at the plate and understanding how to read pitchers. So I think the best way to, like, if you were a pitcher, to learn from what the hitters are telling you, because those are the guys you're facing. So me and Cooper were, we're very close, and he understood a lot at that time.
What did you learn from him, like, specifically?
He had this thing where he wrote on his arm was pitchers throw home runs. Or he had like a, he had an acronym on his forearm. And I'm like, Cooper, what are you writing on your arm? And he told me what it was, something like that. And it was basically him telling himself, like, you don't hit the home runs, pitchers will give you a ball to hit that is a home run. So in my mind, I'm like, then I'm not going to throw you that pitch. Like, I'm not going to just easy give it up to you and make it a difficult at bat for you. And that kind of stuck with me for a while. Just understanding, like, I give up the home run. It's not him hitting the ball.
Yeah, sounds like he gave you a little Crash Davis.
Yeah, a little. I mean, it's still Cooper. I love the guy to death, and he's a really good dude. I mean, he's in, I think, yeah, he's on the 40-man with the Diamondbacks right now. So,
yeah, I think, doing really well. I mean, it'll be official, you know, something when this podcast comes out. But I think as of right now, which is the 6th of April, I believe he's listed on the active roster, not just on the 40-man roster, but the active roster. So fingers crossed, I think he will be making the team. So congratulations to him. But anyways, I wanted to ask you about that because I was like, okay, we interviewed Cooper Hummel. I met him. I keep in touch with him. I know he was in the Brewer system. And I was like, I'm wondering if they crossed paths at any point. So I figured, did you get to play with him in Biloxi a little bit? Or did you miss him in Biloxi?
We just played high A together. Okay. Really. By the time he got up to Biloxi, I was in AAA.
Okay. Yeah. So, and then... So 2017, you know, you so we fast forward in 2017, you get the Biloxi Shockers, and then that fall you go play in the Fall League. And then for the Fall League is, you know, is where a lot of the, you know, the top prospect, where a lot of good top prospects for Major League Baseball go to play. How did your time in the Fall League differ from that, like in the minor leagues, because you're with other players from other teams?
I think it was just a great kind of connecting experience, you know, just networking and understanding that, you know, each organization has their own philosophies. Each organization has what they want to do for each player.
Mm-hmm.
And then understanding that these guys are kind of like the almost 1% of the prospects that the organizations see to, you know, eventually help their organization get better. So there was a lot of good guys there that I've played against and with, and understanding this is kind of like a taste of like what it would be in the big leagues, the way I saw it.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And what was your biggest takeaway from that fall league heading into spring that you think that maybe got you that either a different mindset, or you were just like, okay, this is what I'm going to work on, and this is this year because this is what I learned in fall ball.
I think it was more of a mindset for me. I'm going to do everything that I can possibly to get to the big leagues, and understanding that in the fall league, if I could pitch in there, I could, you know, pitch against any other person. I remember one person in particular I faced was Ronald Acuña, and understanding like if I could face him and, you know, get him out, then there's not really much anybody else that I could face that I won't get out, you know?
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So yeah, you just mentioned 2018 was kind of a big year for you in a way. You know, you go to AAA and play for the Colorado Springs Sky Sox. You know, you've now gone from rookie ball to low A to high A to double A to now AAA, and you're obviously progressing. Crowds are getting bigger, games are getting more intense, players are getting better. for you, you know, what going through these and now into AAA, was it more of a fast paced environment for you? Like, was it just felt like it was way better competition? Like what was your takeaways from getting that start?
For me, it was, I think it was a little bit easier because I knew who I was, and as a pitcher, I knew what I needed to do to get batters out. And in my mind, I was just mastering the craft. That's what I was trying to tell myself, like master your craft and perfect it to the best of your ability so that when you do get to the big leagues, it's going to be like a cakewalk.
Mm-hmm. So you start, you get going on the season, and then all of a sudden you get hurt. How did that happen?
It was actually the last game of the season, I think, and my last batter, because it was two outs.
Really?
Yeah. I remember it was a fastball away, and he ended up grounding out to the third baseman to get the out. And I literally threw the pitch and just felt a pop, and my entire arm just went numb, which I never felt before, because of my Tommy John, I didn't feel really anything. They just told me it was a partial tear with my first one. But this one was a little different, where I actually felt like a pop, and then my hand just became numb, and my elbow just kind of swelled up after the game. And for me, I thought it was just like, okay, I just, you know, maybe aggravated something, so let's take some ibuprofen and let the swelling go down, and it'd be fine. I think I went to Arizona after the season was done to get an MRI, and that same day I got the MRI, I found my results, and it was a complete tear. And kind of, I like going through my head, I'm like, oh no, I got to go through this one more time.
Mm-hmm.
And that first week I was more of just like, how am I going to do this? Where am I going to do this? Like, what is my career going to be like after this? And
yeah,
right now and today as we speak, I'm still trying to think about it and kind of keep moving forward. I'm not done yet. You know?
Yeah. Well, that brings me into like one of my next second to last questions, because it's like, you know, I'm thinking, we discussed earlier with your first Tommy John surgery, you know, it's like, I think at that point, like, look, like, okay, this thing, it's not like in the 80s, you know, this has been, it, you know, we're looking at 40, almost 40 years later, roughly from the first one, or give or take a little bit. But a lot of things change, medical advancements, things like that. The surgery's been done. People are more perfecting it. I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, you get it done once. Yeah, great. I mean, there's great opportunity to come back. Good possibility you're going to be just as good, if not better, than before. But then I'm looking at like, okay, I hear you get a second one. And it's just like, now it's like, okay, well, this is a different scenario, because it's now you're getting your second surgery. But you come back. I mean, you put in the time, you go through a lengthy rehab. I know getting to the majors and staying there, it takes a lot of blood, sweat, tears. I mean, the grind alone for a healthy person is strenuous. But my question to you is, how do you mentally and physically keep yourself in the game chasing that dream? What keeps you in the game going with all of this, like now having this second surgery?
For me, it was just that I don't know. I just can't say no. I'm stubborn. You can ask all of my family. I'm just a very stubborn person. If I have my eyes set on one thing, I'm going to do it. And for me, it's more so that I could prove to everybody that, like, if you put in the time, you put in the effort, and the distractions are going to be there. But if you can manage them and figure out a way that works for you to get up every day and be consistent with your daily routines and with workouts and everything that you can be in your control, things will happen and things will get better. There was a lot of times where I still go through it today, but there's a lot of times where I really want to just, you know, hang up the cleats and start a normal life. But nothing about my entire life was normal. And mm-hmm. I feel like I have to, one, do this for myself and understanding, like, I gave everything my all. And if it's not meant to be, it's not meant to be. But at least I know I've turned every stone and did everything humanly possible for myself to get to where I want to be.
Yeah.
And I mean, I also have friends that are now in the big leagues too. So understanding, like, talking to them and seeing what they're going through, it's kind of like a light at the end of the tunnel of like what it's like to be in the big leagues. And mm-hmm. I've had friends that are in the big leagues for 10 years. I have friends that are in the big leagues for one, and they say it's like opening day every day for them, and understanding like all your hard work is going to pay off if you just keep putting the time and effort into what you love. And I've been doing this for a very long time now, so I am fully invested, and I'm not gonna, you know, I already endured the pain, then might as well get a reward out of it, you know.
Mm-hmm. What do you think's one thing personally that baseball or anybody within your career, like, what's that one thing that stands out from all these levels of baseball for you? Who's taught you something that you take away to this day and you utilize that to keep you going, or you just want to teach other people the same exact thing?
For me is, I think it was back when I was in high school, playing with Colton Wong and Keen Wong and all our buddies. I think at that time, that's where it started to ingrain the mindset of hard work and, you know, being consistent every single day in, day out. That's how you're going to get better. If you take a person that's only practiced 300 hours a week and then put them up against a person that practiced 3,000 hours a week, the person with 3,000 hours are definitely you're going to see more improvement and more skill out of the person that put the time in, put the effort, and got to where they are because of what they did. And I think just looking back when I was younger and having that instilled into me is one of the big things that I learned from baseball, is nothing's going to come easy and you're going to have to put some time and effort and hard work into it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's good. We got about three questions left for you, and I'm going to go.
Okay.
I'm going to go into something a little bit different for two of them. So okay. My one question is what's your favorite baseball movie and why?
Favorite baseball movie would probably be Sandlot.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because I just love Benny the Jet Rodriguez. I actually have the Air Force One cleats that New Balance got, and I love them to death. Those are my favorite pairs. And then just, it's all around good baseball movie. I grew up with that, and as a kid, I would watch it all the time. I didn't know I loved baseball at the time, but that was my favorite movie all the time for baseball.
It must have brought you back to, like, when you got older and you started playing with all your friends. It must have brought some highlights back at that point when you were doing that. You had to have been like, oh, I want to be like Benny the Jet.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yep.
Nice.
I just want to be fast.
Really good. The second to last question I got for you, just another fun one. If you could have one superhuman power, what would it be?
One superhuman power. For me personally, I'm a very outdoorsy person. If I could be someone like Aquaman, I would.
The Jason Momoa would be Aquaman?
Yes, for
okay.
sure.
Okay.
Yeah. I think if I could do that, that would be my superhuman power. It's just because I just love the outdoors and love being in nature. And I mean, I wouldn't want to just be particularly for fish. I mean, I would love to just be for, you know, anything nature wise.
Okay. Very cool. So the last question I have for you, is where are you headed from here? You know, I hear you're off to play some indie ball this summer.
Yes, I'm going to be playing indie ball for the Gastonia Honey Hunters in North Carolina. They've reached out to me, and kind of taking my next steps towards, you know, still becoming a professional baseball or major league baseball player. And hopefully this season is going to be a season for me to prove to not only myself, but other people around baseball, like the scouts and everybody, that I still have it and I still can, you know, perform it at my highest level and eventually into the big leagues.
Excellent. Well, Quentin, thank you for taking time with us today to talk about yourself. There's been a lot of great things. And, before I let you go, I just want to say, like, I'll be looking up to you, checking in on you. But, you know, I think a lot of people could take away a really good work ethic and like a mindset from your story and just not giving up and staying with it after, you know, you've had the setbacks that you have. So, keep it up and we'll be rooting for you, man.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on here. It was a lot of pleasure for me being on here. Thank you.
Yeah, and I'm going to give Jim a hard time and about this.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah. All right, everybody, Quentin Torres-Costa, catch him this summer if you're in North Carolina. Watch some indie ball. He'll be out playing. They look like a skunk, but he'll be out there playing. So go give him a shot. I'll keep track of him. Let's get him back on after some indie ball this year so we can see and hear how his summer went. So, Quentin, thank you very much. And that'll do it for this episode of the Diamonds and Roses podcast. As always, thank you, Baseballism, for being a great sponsor. Thank you to our other sponsor, Devo Bat Company. Appreciate everything that you do for us here at the Diamonds and Roses podcast. You have a great day wherever you are at. Peace out.